Can you hear me? Yes, jolly good. A question was asked at the Logos and Art panel yesterday or the day before. I can't remember, there's been so many of them, which was how can image and text contribute to the life of the individual and by extension the community and the society? Well, I address that paper directly, sorry, that question directly in this paper. I speak as an artist scholar whose scholarship is a direct response to the questions that are raised by the work I make. I always work in collaboration with others, so there's always a confluence of minds going on in this process of developing the art. So my scholarship works towards trying to understand A, what the work is articulating, I'm never always sure, how the work is articulating it, and of equal importance, how the audience is affected by it. Not that the audience, but how the audience is affected by it. This search has led me into the realms of philosophy and neuroscience, and although I don't pretend to be either a philosopher or a scientist, I do draw on these disciplines to help me understand what I do. Now, as my work seems to have a beneficial effect on those who engage with it, it seems a fitting place to start. The work I make has very liminal images. I'm not going to show it to you because it's installations, and to show a picture of an installation that you engage with doesn't quite do the job. I think Nico talked about the way you are in a city and the sense that you are in a space. That's very important to my work. So now I'm going to see if I can work this and talk at the same time. My proposal is that encounters with works of art are a particularly productive way of enhancing the quality of life, as the experience, and this is the important point, the experience of engaging with artworks affect us at several levels of consciousness, from the pre-reflective, the sensate, to the cognitive. So the question that we have to ask is, how do the arts contribute to our quality of life? Well, we've moved in this panel from societies, the relevance of quality of life in the context of societies, through to cities, and now I'm going to address it from the level of the individual's lived experience, their sense of being in and with the world. And the last is particularly important because we do engage with our environment all the time, and art is part of that environment. So once the basic needs of survival are met, I'm glad that the Maslow pattern was brought up because that's very important. Engagement with art, whether at the level of high or popular art, and it's very important to include them to both, whether it be painting, music, dance, film, even television, dare I say, contributes to the quality of life in a number of ways. Just looking at these images here, you can kind of get a sense of what those works mean. I'm afraid they're a bit dark. But let's just look at the various ways, and I'll whiz through these just so you can see them. Emotional well-being, social well-being, a sense of self-esteem. Now, this is generated usually by engaging with the practice of making art, and it's why it's used extensively as a therapeutic discipline. Enhance awareness of our world, we develop our perception in different ways. For me, this is the most important. We intensify, and that word is important, intensify the experiential embodied dimension of our understanding. It's not all cognitive. We fuse our sensate experience with our imagination. That necessarily brings in the cognitive dimension. Imagination is in part cognitive. Oops, point it there, point the right thing there. So this image is Turner, Sunrise at Norham Castle. It's actually quite an interesting painting for me because it does what Susan Greenfield was talking about, which is engages directly with the senses. It's very liminal. I have a great affinity with Turner's work. But you engage your cognitive dimension by trying to work out what it is. But it does give you a particular sense of being. Whoa, too far away. So for me, in terms of art, it's the foundation of our sense of the quality of life which is important, and this lies in the quality of our lived experience. And the way this is achieved is through physiological and emotional processes. Ah, oh, it's all right, I've got 10 minutes left. And these are what take place when we engage with art. The processes is what I'm interested in. Now, having felt the way that earlier Turner looked, as it were, can you feel how something looks? This is another Turner. This is called Snowstorm. Now, here, you can see the intensities of a storm. The way it's actually rather large, unfortunately, but the way the painter has swept the force of the storm around the canvas. This painting moves. And I think movement is a very, very important aspect of what we're dealing with. Now, the notion, I'm literally leaping through various parts of my paper. It's quite a dense paper, and I suggest that if you're interested in what I'm saying, you read it later, if you haven't managed to do so already. The notion that the arts could have a beneficial effect on the quality of life, of course, was first recognized by Plato and Aristotle. Now, interestingly, this notion that it has a beneficial aspect, effect on our being is used extensively in the health industry. Art, as I've mentioned before, is used as a therapy. It's used as a therapy with everybody from people who are physically ill, psychologically ill, or even those with terminal illnesses, because it's recognized that one's quality of life, one's sense of being in the world, is an important part of the healing process. Of course, art has the potential to have a harmful effect on life, on the quality of life. Now, this is articulated very clearly in the tendency of all governments, whether they're totalitarian or not, to censor art that they don't agree with, to censor art that they think will have a harmful effect on their citizens. Robert Mapplethorpe, I don't know if any of you know his photography, he's an absolutely extraordinary photographer. His work has been banned in America. His book was, it was demanded of the University of Birmingham at one time that his book was removed from the library because it was offensive to some. Chris Olifi, again, it's not a terribly good image here, it's a bit dark, but Chris Olifi is an English or British artist, and he made a piece called The Holy Virgin Mary, 1998. One of Olifi's media that he uses is, in fact, elephant dung. And there is another image on that painting which represents the Cupids. Now, this also New York tried to ban. Egon Schiele, part of what the Nazis called degenerative art, although made long before the Nazis. So all these areas of the beneficial and the harmful are all part of the experience of art. Now, I personally think that if you see art that challenges your perspective and your nice, comfortable way of being, this is a good thing, because it makes you think again. It makes you think of your own perspective and really consider whether they are the right thing. I'm going to leap on to another area, which actually also has its roots in Greek philosophy, which is that individuals have different motivations for engaging with art. Susan Greenfield touched on this yesterday. One is the hedonic. This is immediate satisfaction. This is what you get in that first buzz. This is what the dancers get at raves. The other side is the eudaimonic. Now, this emerges from Aristotle's Ethics, and it's a longer-term view. This is that you do some work in your engagement with art towards a better way of being, a better way of life. So these motivations are very, very important, but they're not binary opposites. They are part and parcel of the same continuum. And you can engage for eudaimonic reasons, but at the same time, you are getting pleasure. Back to my main thrust of my work and of my position here is it's the quality of our somatosensory responses that underpins our encounters with art. The cognitive tends to come later. This painting, made in the 17th century, again, if you see this in the real, it is the most extraordinary experience, and I am always struck dumb. I cannot say anything about it. All I can do is feel what it does to me. Now, that feeling, I would argue, is a different mode of knowing. And this mode of knowing that the arts give rise to, I'm just going to see how much longer I've got, that's fine. This mode of knowing that the arts give rise to, Gerald Edelman, who's a Nobel laureate neuroscientist, says underpins our thought. So it's not something that kind of feeds messages up to the brain. It actually is part of our processes of thought. So this mode of knowing is, again, these images are not working. This mode of knowing, you can feel what's going on in that painting by Picasso. This is a tragedy. You can just feel, not just understand, but feel through your body. You understand through a process of empathy, I think. And Galese, whom I'll talk about in a minute, discusses empathy in some depth. These neuroscientists have all been investigating this mode of knowing, finding out how we know at this level. This, I argue, characterizes the thinking involved in making and understanding artwork. Now, I don't care whether it's geometrically based or not, and however much one uses one's cognitive mind in the making of work, it is this mode of thinking that guides you as an artist, that guides the decisions you make without knowing that you've made them. This is another Turner, and again, you can't really see the quality, but it's a very important one in the context of my work, because it brings to bear something that the philosopher Deleuze calls affect. Now, affect is his way of articulating this mode of knowing, that you cannot know, but you know. And I think we often forget that our bodily knowing is a very, very important part of the way we understand. I'm losing my microphone. Oops. I'll just hold it like this. Oh dear, it's falling off. Somebody come and help me. Brian Massumi, who has translated Deleuze quite extensively, describes affect as the intensity that characterizes a work of art, a non-conscious, never to be conscious remainder. Deleuze refers to the arts, or the process of the arts, as the pure being of sensation, which takes us right back to Susan Greenfield. Sorry, I'm going to have to see if I can put this on, because I can't wave my arms around. And if I can't wave my arms around, I can't speak. Okay. He also has another expression for this notion of affect, and I do go into affect in my paper, which is that it's the pre-personal intensities that correspond to the passage from one experiential state to another. And it's that passage that I find particularly interesting, back to Turner. Art, of course, is not all to do with sensation. There is also a cognitive dimension, and this comes through. A lot of experiments have been done on this in terms of music, with visual art. Vartanian and Gull are particularly interesting because they suggest that abstract art actually engages the cognitive part of one's mind more than representational art, because you have to work at understanding. Happens with dance. And I'm going to leap very quickly forward to the business with Galese. This image from Bruegel is people dancing. Now, when you dance, when people dance, if you've ever done that dance, what happens is that the human movement, that the neurological activity that represents human movement when you're performing an action, and this Peter, Mike, and can't remember his name, he also mentioned this. This is simulated, it's an embodied simulation takes place when you perceive that action. Galese is very interesting, and I am going to bring to a close here, although I've got many more slides. I find Galese very interesting. There's also another scientist, a neuroscientist called Varela. These scientists are interestingly drawing on the work of philosophers to help them to understand the implications of the science they are doing. Now, most of them draw on phenomenology, but I would suggest that a lot of what is going on goes towards Deleuze's notion of affect, which of course some of you will know originally came from Spinoza, but this notion of affect, but as well as the phenomenological position. So again, we have science and the humanities and art all coming together. And I will stop there, even though I have more to say. Thank you very much.